Father, we receive your Spirit now, always. Lord, I can truly say, I know I do it, but I, down in the heart, I think I speak for everyone here, I don't even want to think without you thinking for me. I realize, may I confess my inabilities and receive your abilities. We pray that for everyone here today, that we hear you, your Holy Spirit. You delight in logic. You delight in these things because you created it, and it's something that for us to enjoy along with you, to use, to discover more of you. May it be so this day. Amen. Thank you for your flexibility this afternoon. I didn't get everything done I wanted to get done, and so I thought, okay, well, we'll give it a few extra minutes. Now, if I remember right, we were talking about, y'all help me, we had gone through listing my own beliefs and why, is that right? And we talked about being a Berean, right? Okay. Had we gone to preparing a ready answer? Had we done that? Okay. And I think where we, and we, that's right, we talked about learning to put questions in the form of two possibilities only, right? We talked about that. And we, it's where we stopped is where we're going to go. Okay, this is good. I'm glad we got some of this stuff done. The next major point is the argumentum ad ignorantiam. I can't even say it anymore. Ignoratium. And it, or not ignoratium, ignorantium. I don't have a way to put that up there because I'm ignorant. But it's ignorantium. And it is the argument from ignorance. I actually remember as a little child hearing someone make this statement. And the thought I had at the time was, oh yeah. Well, I was 7, 8, 9 years old. Okay? When I was a child, I reasoned as a child. And I'm going to explain what this argument is here in a second. And it is what you hear, certainly from children. And it makes sense to them, but folks, it ain't. It is the argument from ignorance. And like I said, as a kid, I remember hearing somebody say that, and I went, oh yeah, because they were talking about God. And somebody, I guess, had brought up in some discussion, they didn't believe in God. And one of the other children said something, well, you can't prove he's not there. And I went, hey, yeah, that's right. You can't prove that. And at that time, it made perfectly fine sense. As you grow older, you go, that doesn't make perfectly fine sense anymore. Thank you, Lord. But it's the argument from ignorance, and it sounds ignorant when you even say it. It's a double negative. Because the way it comes out is, you can't not prove that. You hear what? You cannot not prove that. Now, the double negative would make it makes it sound pretty bad. But the way it's defined is that something is to be believed until proven false. Something is to be believed until proven false. Whatever it is must be true because it's never been proven false. And so people will come up with statements like, you cannot prove that God does not exist, and go, we just won the argument. I don't think so. You can't prove that God doesn't exist, and we're going to talk about, you can't prove that he does exist. We're going to talk about and I'm going to let you look at some articles downloaded off the internet, and because what goes along with this is the statement that I've heard many brilliant men say, you cannot prove a negative. And I thought, I really have a hard time sometimes, I don't know about you, but sometimes getting my mind around that. Maybe I should say my brain. You cannot prove a negative. The more I read about it in people trying to tell me that that was not true, the more I realized how true it was, and the more I began to finally understand. So I want to talk about this a little bit today. And the way that we're going to talk about it is I'm going to put some of these, and I think I've got maybe names up there, so we need to later on. Ravi Zacharias has made the statement, you cannot prove a negative. I mean, he and I'm not going to argue with Ravi a whole lot. But I got out on the internet, and there are these people saying, well, no, this is true. And the more I read these things, in some places, the angrier I got. And you'll see why. And I want you to see why. I want you to, you can do some thinking. Ravi brings up, you cannot prove a negative. But these other people are saying, oh, yeah, you can. And I want you to read, and I want you to hear these people. They are looking down on you. You're gonna see loaded statements. There's all sorts of fun things in here that if you don't get as angry as I am, you'll probably enjoy. Ravi makes the statement, and he and R.C. Sproul, these two men that I've listened to a lot on these things and reading about it, it is easier, listen to me, here's the way it works. It is easier to verify the truth of a proposition than to falsify it. Now, this is where I start right away. I kind of tilt, and of course, it's the afternoon. Hopefully, you took a short nap, being given a little bit of extra time. But it's easier to verify the truth of a proposition than to falsify it. Now, let me give you the example that Sproul uses. You can make the statement that there is gold in Alaska. Now, that, to verify that, all you have to do is find one little piece of gold. Hey, there is gold in Alaska. We just found it. There's evidence that there's gold in Alaska. Of course, if you come back and say, wait a second, there is no gold in Alaska, that becomes much more difficult, because I can say that, okay, the gold that you just got is the last gold that's there. In other words, I am now making the statement, and it's a negative, there is no gold in Alaska. And what happens is, and this is sadly the way it kind of works out, is with the way that people would put that argument to somebody, is they go, they get the gold, and wait a second, I just falsified what you just said. That's not true, you didn't. That's the last piece of it, and what I'm telling you is true. There is no gold left in Alaska, and maybe that's one of the ways that you can think of it. And whenever there is a negative proposition, it becomes, in many ways, impossible to verify. You cannot prove a negative. Now, turn this thing back on. Let's see if we can make this work properly. Negative proof is a logical fallacy which takes the structure of X is true because there's no proof that X is false. Okay? And I want you, again, this is propaganda. It really gets this way, and you're gonna see what I'm talking about just as we go along. And we're just going to read through some of this stuff. If the only evidence for something's existence is a lack of evidence for it not existing, then the default position is one of skepticism and not credulity. And by that, what they mean is that it's not a credible thing. This, look how quickly we go to it. This type of negative proof is common in proof of God's existence or in pseudosciences, where it is used to attempt to shift the burden of proof, and we're going to talk about burden of proof as we go along, onto the individual proposing existence, not the one questioning the existence. When proof is presented, one important element, I want you to look at what this guy says, to remember in regards to negative proof is that once positive evidence has been presented, the burden shifts to the skeptic to refute the evidence. Now, what that's saying let's go with what this person says. Watch this. One cannot keep arguing from the position of negative proof after the presentation of evidence. Okay? In other words, what I was saying to you a while ago, there's no gold in Alaska. I just found gold in Alaska. That was the last piece. You can't keep doing that. And now, here's what this guy says. This point, however, is completely lost on most creationists, I'm surprised he put most in there, and intelligent design advocates who shout from the rooftops that there are no transitional fossils long after they've been repeatedly shown there are. Now, I am here to tell you something that's a lie. The transitional fossils, even if you look, and of course, he talked about it the other day, Ken Ham, about the horse thing. I mean, that was the Bible when I was growing up. Boy, they showed you, and here's these four horses of the, anyway. There it is. But you've got one, and it's funny if you actually read about it. It's been a long time since I read about it, but it jumps back and forth with the number of ribs, number of toes, all sorts of things, but these people have decided this is a transitional. It's not a transitional fossil. The jump between, let's go ahead and go with the, I can't think of the name of the feathered dinosaur that they like to bring up, whose name I just, Archaeopteryx. Mrs. Davis. Hey! Did we get that? Did we get that on video here? Look over there at the camera. Archaeopteryx is not, I mean, think about just the jump between, they're saying, okay, this is a transitional fossil. That is not. It's an animal that suddenly appears and suddenly disappears. To say that these feathers suddenly came from scales is beyond credulity, shall we say. What they tell you is that these transitional fossils have been shown to you, and it's been presented. And the fact is we'll look at my tacky little notes right now. And you can see how, I mean, there's not any, I never get emotional, I just want you to know, which they have not been. Leave me alone. This computer hasn't been on in a while, and it's very lonely. The transitional fossils are circumstantial at best. By circumstantial, in other words, we found a fossil, it's in, and here it is, it's in the layer of whatever layer, and we go, why? How do we know it's that old? Because it's in that particular layer. How do we know how old? Because it's that fossil was found there. So we won't go into circular reasoning right now, but this stuff is not scientific. And often, as I tactfully put down, falsified. What the fallacy is not. A common saying in pseudologic is you can't prove a negative. That saying is not true. Now, I want you to watch what this person does. Please, this is a great opportunity to say, okay, God, show me how well you think. An absence of something can be proved in various ways. Listen to what he just said. Come on. An absence of something can be proved in various ways. First, by reductio ad absurdum. The fact is that, again, I'm looking at my tacky notes that I've got and you can't see yet. In fact, we'll go ahead and look at some of these things because, or by proving something else that is inconsistent with the presence of something. For example, in law, a party may have the burden of proving non-receipt of certain correspondence and may bear that burden of proof. Now, what that means is that if you can show, this is why attorneys send, certified mail, and you have to sign for it to prove you got it, all right? And because if they go, I never got it, the other people can't prove, well, we actually sent them the bill and we tell them we were suing them and all that stuff. At least by preponderance of the evidence, by introducing into evidence a docket record in which the correspondent would have been noted. In mathematics, there are plenty of proofs of negative propositions, such that there is no largest prime number, no rational square root of 2. One might also note that the saying itself is negative. Now, there is actually a point. You cannot prove a negative is a negative, except what? The word not, and what else is in there? Think. Negative. Two negatives make it a... You understand what? But don't tell this guy that. Believing bull. That's good. That's the next one we're going to. That's the next one. This guy is, this one, I left that on there because this one, this guy, this first guy was, I was fairly calm. I didn't stay calm with him. All right. Folks, look, we're looking at this last paragraph here. And what I wrote down was, and I want to hear from you. What is wrong with this paragraph? Let's see if we can get as much up there. Yeah, that's good. What's wrong with that? Look at this. I want to hear from you. The first thing, we already talked about this one, but talk to me about that he is proving something in various ways. First example, e.g., it means example, reducio ad absurdum. Have we gotten that one, done that one this time through? Reducio ad absurdum? All right. Now, when we're talking about reducio ad absurdum, under what heading is reducio ad absurdum? What is the heading? What have we been talking about here in this logic class? Logical fallacies. Reducio ad absurdum, while a great deal of fun and is something that you can go, excuse me, this is going to lead to that, and I believe it's a great way to show things to people. It's a great argument to use. It is not proof. Reducio ad absurdum, this person is saying, they're supposedly smarter than you and me, and they are trained. And they are using a fallacy to prove another fallacy. Do you understand what I'm saying to you? They say these things, and this is supposed to, and please hear me, things like this, and with the attitude, especially when we go and look at the next guy, what this is supposed to do is intimidate you. And I need to say this. When you rely upon your own mind, that's exactly what will happen. They will win. You must. You must. And it's not winning and losing or anything like that. It's what Jesus did, and we have talked about this. We're going to talk about it a lot, Lord willing, if we can get everything in. But we would see Jesus in the conversation. The Pharisees make the last stab, and he would turn away and speak suddenly to the people. He was not concerned. He was not concerned about, did I win the argument? Did I look good? You know, hey, Pete, was I doing all right there? That's not what it was about. It was about the people hearing truth and receiving that truth. Do you understand what I'm saying? And the use of reducio ad absurdum. That is to get in your face, you know. But it doesn't prove anything. Reducio ad absurdum, the reason that it is a fallacy is because you are, what part of your mind do you use to do a reducio ad absurdum argument? Your imagination. You use your imagination, well, it is for evolutionists, but your imagination is not proof. And I know they just hit the ceiling. How dare somebody that's a creationist, a believer in God, say something about imagination? And you know what? Fine. I am in no way do I think that we as believers need to be trying to prove that God is real. If you do that, the person didn't get it. They didn't get it. It's got to be that you, it's not that you are born from an argument, born from, you know, the IMI's students' great ability to use, no, from above. And the purpose of even talking about these things is, it gets us over to where we were yesterday. In the book of Hebrews, of course this will mess us up on Sunday, but putting aside, let us lay aside every what? Yeah, every weight. In the NAS it says every encumbrance. The literal word is tumor. Okay, that sounds good to me. Let's lay those aside. It's a weight, something that is stopping you from moving. Encumbrance and the sin that entangles us. Now, the point that I think that should make to us as believers is things that are non-belief. Now, by non-belief, I don't necessarily mean unbelief. You spend we can talk about anything. We've talked about it before. But even things that appear to be fairly neutral can, especially if you do it a lot, mess you up. Whatever is the competition with God, maybe we can put it that way. Sin is obviously something that entangles us. But an encumbrance is something that is just slowing us down in our move. Well, you know what? One of the things we talk about here is I've forgotten what we talk about here. Adding seeds of doubt to people, and that is giving to an unbeliever, a non-believer, an encumbrance. Do you understand that? That's in many ways what we're talking about in this logic is to be able to say to somebody, "Oh, I know you believe that way. Here, have an encumbrance." Clunk. You want to see them trip in their non-belief. Am I making sense, folks? And this person is coming up and throwing this ad absurdum thing at you, or by proving something is inconsistent with the presence of that something. Now, maybe you can go along with that. But I want to, again, look, the example used of a court of law is correct. Now, I want you to understand that when he said that, that is correct. But there is a difference. He says, the absence of something may prove the existence of something. But that is quite different from the statement, the absence of something can be proved in various ways. And that's what he says. If you look, where does he say that? Oh, I can't even find it here. What is it? Is it the one above? Yes, thank you. Oh, getting back into my tackiness. We won't do that. Anyway, the fact is that in a court of law, how is a court of law used? The things in a court of laws are beyond a reasonable doubt, okay? And in logic, while there is some of that, that is not what we're talking about here. We're talking about something that's actually been proven. Not, okay, let's all get together and vote. That's what happened in the court of law. Or you proved it before the judge, who is probably leaning one way or the other anyway. In mathematics, there are plenty of proofs of negative propositions, such as no largest prime number, but to me, that is really reaching. Mathematical laws are proven by experiment and by existence. That's different than we're going to give a proposition of something that is unproven. That cannot be. In other words, math can be proven. It can be shown. But that's not what. But you understand, you've got to please hear me. I mean, this is propaganda. Do you notice he's jumping from, he takes one thing and says, here, this is rock solid. And then he jumps over to our argument, which is a marshmallow, and say they're the same. They're not the same. It's not the same. This guy's name is Stephen Law. You better believe it. Okay. We'll talk fast. Here we go. One reason, which is what he does, is one reason that some people suppose science and reason are incapable of establishing beyond reasonable doubt. This guy is fantastic, by the way. This just gets to be amazing listening to this fellow. One reason that some people suppose science and reason are incapable of establishing beyond reasonable doubt certain supernatural claims, for example, fairies or angels or spirit beings exist, are false is that they assume you can't prove a negative. Indeed, this is widely supposed to be some sort of law of logic. Now, look quickly. Georgia minister. Now, I'm going to tell you something. Now, I know we've got people here from Georgia. In the press, this is true. In the press, if they make sure they put a southern state, I'm going to ask, how quickly do you go stupid and ignorant? Because they've told you so. If it's Florida may be okay. Why? Because a bunch of people from New York moved down there. That's all right. But if you're talking about Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Louisiana, they're stupid. I mean, and immediately they do it and make sure Georgia minister, you know, at least he put doctor, asserts that one of the laws of logic you can't prove is a negative. If price is correct and it's indeed a law of logic, then of course it immediately follows we can't prove that there are no fairies, angels, or spirit beings and there is no God. We will have established that the non-existence of God is indeed beyond the ability of reason or science to establish. Fact, however, this supposed law of logic is no such thing. As Stephen Hales, which is a different thing we may look at one at a time today, points in his paper, you can prove a negative. You can't prove a negative. It's a principle of folk logic, not actual logic. Now, I disagree, although I want you to listen to this guy, the way that he talks. First thing he says is that it's proving a negative. It were true itself, be unprovable. We've already talked about that. Notice that any claim, we're not going to talk about this. Well, no, we are. Listen to what he says. Can be transformed into a negative by a little rephrasing. The reason I bring it up is because he does a lot of rephrasing on things, and I'm not going to go through that kind of thing, but I want to look at, as Hales notes, when people say you can't prove a negative, what they really mean is that you cannot prove that something does not exist. What they really mean is that you cannot prove that something does not exist. Now, this person, here he goes, if John claims there's a unicorn in the tool shed. Okay? I can quickly establish he is mistaken by going and taking a look. We can do a similar establish there's no Loch Ness Monster by draining the lock. That's a lake for those of you from Georgia. But what of the claim that unicorns once existed? Or Alabama? We can't travel back in time. Now, I want you to listen to what this guy says as we go along. He says, and here's what I want you to look at. It depends on what you mean by prove. Most of you were not around a whole lot when Bill Clinton was being questioned by people. Now, this guy is a Rhodes Scholar. He's brilliant, and he's being questioned. And this attorney asked him a question, something like, what is your definition of this? And Clinton literally said, this is on videotape, I bet you can see it on the internet, I haven't looked for it, seen it enough, and he said, Well, it depends on what you mean by is. This is the President of the United States. You wonder why he got impeached. Folks, what he began to do was let's redefine everything. And if you listen to what this guy does, right here, up here, the cosmic veil, things may be supposed to exist on this side of the veil, such as unicorns, Martians, rabbits with 20 heads and so on. We would not be able to prove the non-existence of these other things either. Now, I want you to look, we laugh at this, but I want you to hear the loaded language. Look at this. If this point were correct, it would apply not just to supernatural beings lying beyond the cosmic veil, but also things that are supposed to exist with us, such as unicorns, etc. We would not be able to prove the non-existence of any of these things either. Folks, he's giving you a statement, but he's lying. The fact is, you can't. You can't prove the non-existence of these things. Why? I mean, I understand that the argument is ignorant sounding, but please listen to me. Why don't we find unicorns? There's a perfectly fine reason for that. We don't have a unicorn detector. And if you had a unicorn, you know, that's, see, I mean, if you had the correct machine. Now, you know what, people, oh, that's so ignorant. I can't believe anyone would say such a thing. Now, folks, I don't believe in unicorns. I mean, they may be around, but we don't know. And that's the point that I'm trying to get across, is that when they say you can't prove a negative, you can't prove a negative. We don't know. Oh, that's so ignorant. Really? Let's see. How long have we known about atoms? How long have we known? If it's only been in the last few years that they discovered, what's the particle that they discovered that's actually smaller than atoms? And it goes on and on and on. There are things that we don't know that are there because we have no way to prove it. But when somebody says it's there, Einstein, theory of relativity. Oh, my goodness. What's wrong with you, fella? It made no sense until somebody began to think about it, look at it, and they tested it. Einstein was so certain of what he was saying, he would actually put in his the experiments different things that would make people want to go and check it out. In other words, basically, I dare you, come on, to go and take a look at what he had actually said, because this is true. Now, the fact is that this person making a statement like this, we would not be able to prove the non-existence of these things either, but that is the point, is that we cannot. But now look, but is this point correct? Look what he does. Is it true we can never prove that something does not exist? Remember, his original point was, you can't. Look what he now says. Again, two times, it depends. Now, we're going to have that word with us quite a bit here from this fellow. Oh my. It depends on what you mean by prove. The word has a variety of meanings. Well, what a shock. By saying something is proved, I mean that it is established beyond all possible doubt. That is not, again, necessarily proof. As I put down in my notes, suddenly there is agreement. Now, I want you to understand something. The word, when he says it depends, what he is doing actually is agreeing with that point. It depends. Understand. Think on it. Think. He says, does it follow we can't prove unicorns never existed? And his statement, it depends, is simply a degree of what? Yeah, got it? Did you hear? But he doesn't want you to actually think that. He's got to keep on moving. So do we. We've got 5 minutes left. The word has a variety of meanings. By saying something is proved, I mean that it's established beyond all possible doubt. Or I might mean it's been established beyond reasonable doubt. Now, that's a court of law, of course, which is not what we're talking about here. Can we establish beyond reasonable doubt that unicorns have never inhabited the earth? True. True. The history of our planet has been and gone so that we can no longer directly inspect it. This is one of the main arguments that creationists give. Were you there? And this, again, is one of the things that I have really, through the years, gone, this is awful. Because they say, here's what science. Somebody tell me what science is. Come on, what do you got to have to do? Prove it in a laboratory. You've got to be able, it's got to be repeatable. You've got to be able to put it in a laboratory. You've got to put it to under scientific, but not evolution. We go, there's a fossil. Aha! It's proven. You have not proven anything. They look at data and they have interpreted it in the way that they want to. And again, we go back to, it depends. Can we establish beyond reasonable doubt that unicorns never inhabited the earth? True, the history of our planet has been and gone, so we can no longer directly inspect it. But surely, please people, listen. Listen to what has just been said. Surely, really? And stop calling me Shirley. But if unicorns did roam the earth, we would expect to find some evidence of their presence. So you would expect, but I'm here to tell you that it was recently that they found evidence of a new animal. They're finding them all the time that they didn't know existed. That was a dead one. They also found in China a new species of spider. Wow. I mean, that's nice, but, you know, did we know it existed beforehand? And if someone said, oh, there's this spider that looks like, no, there's not. What? We don't have evidence of it. And again, this guy, remember, he had a PhD written behind his name. Do not be intimidated by these people. Now, your brilliance is not going to non-intimidate you. You're living in Christ is what's going to do that. That's it. I mean, this kind of stuff is, and you don't need to win the argument. That's not what this is about. We would have fossils of unicorns or at least of closely related animals. Oh, and now look at what has he done with this? At least of closely related animals from which unicorns might plausibly have evolved. Do you understand what he just did? He just made sure we are believing, it's a given that you believe in evolution. Okay? This is the propaganda. There is none. We also have plenty of evidence that unicorns are fictional creation. Do we? I mean, people write about them, but we don't know if people saw them or not. In which case, it this is a big deal, guy. But look what they do. This is the nature of their arguments. You know, at the end of the Sermon on the Mount, Jesus looks at us. He looks at us. And he says, okay, here's the comparison. Sand or a rock. And I mean, he means it. Because the way that the rabbis talked at that time was, well, and they still do this. Rabbi so-and-so said, that's what the Mishnah and the Talmud are full of. Basically, they're commentaries. And they go back with, Rabbi so-and-so said. And nobody speaks with authority. We had a student that was here a number of years ago, and he said, one of the things that shocked me when I got to IMI was the way that you and Mrs. Davis talk so boldly, confidently about the Word. He said, I was shocked. I'd never heard anything like that. So that's sad. Folks, to speak boldly, I'm not talking about getting into an argument, but just this is simply the truth. And I'm not backing down. There's not going to be any reason for me to back down. This is the way that it is. And for someone to come up and say, well, I surely must have to believe in evolution, I don't. We have plenty of evidence that Unicorns are fictional. How much time we have? 20 seconds? 5 minutes. Okay, we're really doing good. Indeed, I'd suggest. Now, remember, this guy is proving something to us. So far, we've had to depend about 3 or 4 times. We've had to allow him to change definitions of things at least a couple of times. And now we're going to lean over on his suggestions. We can prove this beyond reasonable doubt. In response, it might be say, but you can't prove conclusively beyond all possible doubt that unicorns never roamed the earth. This is undeniably true. Folks, you want to go, this is what we've been trying to say. You want us to define terms on your terms, and you want us to think like you think, okay? And you want us to doubt what you doubt, and it goes on and on and on. And I'm afraid as we go along, I've got to find where my notes are here. This point is not peculiar to negatives. We made about any claim about the unobserved, and thus any scientific theory at all, including scientific theories about what does exist. We can prove beyond reasonable doubts that dinosaurs existed, but not beyond all possible doubt. Despite the mountain of evidence that dinosaurs roamed the earth, it's still possible to say that all the dinosaur fossils are fakes placed there by alien pranksters long ago. Let's sum up. If you can't prove a negative, means you can't prove beyond reasonable doubt that certain things don't exist, then the claim is just false. We prove the non-existent things on a regular basis. If, on the other hand, you can't prove a negative, means you cannot prove beyond all possible doubt that something does not exist, well, that may, but he just can't come out and say it. It's true. So what? I couldn't believe, when he said that, I just lost it. In bold, I have written, in all caps, oh my, with how many presumptions might we make for you so that you can get to be right? Will you fall on the floor and scream and cry and hit the floor and stomp the floor too? But surely, we would expect. My final comment was, okay, we give up. Please don't pitch a fit. You are right. All of this, what it gets down to, I mean, folks, really, is this is what he basically, at the end of his paper, agrees. You can't prove a negative. Now, what we are talking about is a negative proposition. And he basically gets around to saying, okay, that's right, you can't. He didn't want to say it. But we'll go ahead and stop there since we're out of time.